This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come.
If you could change one thing about social media, what would it be? Would it be resetting your algorithm? What about switching it off altogether? Because a campaign has launched this week to fix our feeds, calling for that option. So how would it work? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, my chat with Chanel Kontos. She's changed the conversation around consent in this country. Now she's leading this push to give us the option to ditch algorithms.
We are not trying to take anything away from Australians. We're not trying to tell Australians that their feeds are bad or that they should change anything. We're simply saying we should have this option.
Yeah, I'm keen to hear what you think of this because there's already a lot of attention on the government's social media ban, which is coming into effect next week for kids. Do you think this should be the next step? Message in 0439 757 555, our longer listen of the week coming up soon. First though, festivals.
Hack! Everywhere in Australia is doing it tough. I wish we had more money, but I don't want to take any from anyone else either. Just find more and give it out.
On Triple J.
It's pretty much the story of festival season these days. Not what is coming up and what you're looking forward to, but what has been cancelled or what you think might be cancelled. Nothing really matches that crushing feeling, does it, that you get after you bought your tickets, booked your travel, got your plans sorted, and then you find out this event you've been looking forward to for months, it's off. This week, Park Waves became the latest festival to cancel shows in Australia. The organisers saying the numbers just don't stack up. I'm wondering, have you had something cancelled recently? Big live music event. What was it? How are you feeling? Do you get a bit anxious buying tickets to festivals now? You're worried about the prospect of cancellations. You think it's not worth it? Message in 0439 757 555. Because we know the festival scene is so fragile as it is, but there has been some good news. Millions of dollars in grants to support some of these events. But can this investment actually save live music in this country? And if not, what can? Jackson Worthington's been looking into it.
None of us had played anything on that scale before, so we were all looking forward to it and kind of excited to see the other bands that were there as well.
I'm at a pub in North Perth chatting to Zach. He's the frontman for his band Good Grief. A couple of weeks ago, they played their first ever festival right here.
A couple people messaged us and said that it was their favourite discovery of the weekend, which means a lot to hear that people enjoyed it. We enjoyed it.
Good Grief were on the lineup for Sidefest, an independent festival organised by label Sidequest, which represents Sly Withers and some other Aussie bands. The festival was promoted on Triple J and had a lineup of more than 40 acts across 3 days, including Stand Atlantic, Stella Donnelly, and Sly Withers. This is the fourth instalment of the festival, which had been on break since 2023.
2023 was a kind of a comedy of errors and a perfect storm of things happening in the industry. Expanded the festival to Brisbane as well as Perth, and it just didn't work. So we lost a bit of money.
Simon Skinny O'Leary is the director of Sidequest. He says the period right after COVID was great for Aussie bands and the live music scene. But when international acts started coming back and the cost of living started to bite in 2023, things took a turn.
I started my company in 2021 and didn't really take any money out of it and had a really good couple of years. And at the end of 2023, there was no money left in the bank account.
Skinny and Sly Withers thought Sidefest was dead after that. But then the federal government announced a program called Revive Live. It's the government's main live music policy and provides grants to support festivals and live music venues. Sidefest was granted about $80,000 in the first wave of funding.
Revive Live was exactly the right timing and exactly the right amount of funding that we needed to succeed again and to start this thing again.
In November, the government announced the latest recipients of the Revive Live grants. More than $10 million was allocated to 105 projects, including 59 festivals and 46 venues. Sidefest wasn't successful in getting funding for next year's event. Skinny says without some form of government support, it'll be hard to put on a festival of the same size next year. He reckons there needs to be a more sustainable funding model for grassroots events.
Where that money comes from, whether it is from those large promoters and shows or whether it's from somewhere else, remains to be seen. I think there just needs to be a better conversation had between levels of government about what is needed and a bit more transparency with the music community at large as to what the plan is, if there is a plan. And if there's not a plan, can we please make one?
We can invest a lot of money into trying to give local and young artists a stage to grow and develop, but unfortunately sometimes it is a gamble and we don't know how many people are going to show up.
Tyler Dombrowski is the CEO of Crowbar Group. They own live music venues in Sydney and Brisbane. They got $100,000 in Revive Live grants last year, but Tyler agrees the live music scene needs more sustainable support.
We need Revive to continue and to increase in funding, but I think we also need our governments working swiftly on tax and insurance relief for live music venues.
Tyler reckons a ticket levy to fund local musicians and music venues could also make a difference. The levy would be a small fee added to the price of tickets for big stadium and arena shows. The UK implemented something similar last year.
Australia could really look to that to kind of jump ahead and put some better mechanisms in place to support grassroots music venues long term.
Tyler's worried about what might happen to the scene in the next few years if there isn't more support offered.
At the end of the day, the rent keeps going up and the bills keep going up. Cost of living is impacting everyone. Entertainment sometimes gets put to the sideline when you're thinking about your budgeting. It's scary. I don't know what the next 5 to 10 years looks like.
Hack on Triple J.
Jackson Worthington reporting there, and we did contact the Arts Minister to find out if the government has a plan to put more money into the live music scene. We got a response. A spokesperson for the Department of the Arts said the government has established Music Australia and Creative Australia to help support Australian artists and audiences, and that $69 million has been provided to Music Australia, and that the government is going to begin consultation on a new cultural strategy next year. The spokesperson also saying that work is progressing on a voluntary ticket levy involving big promoters and ticketing companies. Getting messages from you who've had experiences of having events cancelled, it's not nice, but it's definitely happening. Kelly from Wangaratta says, an independent local festival here just got cancelled, time off work booked, camping sorted, but thanks to bureaucracy and red tape, our weekend is ruined. All right, let's get into this a little more now with someone who researches this area, Dr. Sam Whiting, who looks into music industries, cultural economy at RMIT. G'day, Sam. Thanks for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
What do you make of these grants for a start, like Revive Live? Do you think they are the answer to helping this really struggling industry?
Yeah, look, I think Revive Live goes some way to assisting a lot of the struggling operators out there in the music sector, particularly festivals. In this round, we've seen quite a lot of money go to artist fees specifically for festivals. And that is good because it, you know, creates certainty of supply. It means those festivals can kind of make ends meet for another year. And the plus side in particular is that a lot of that money is going to artists directly. But I think the downside of the current round, or the most recent round of Revive Live grants, is that it's kind of short-termism. You know, it's not investing in long-term infrastructure. There are some great grants that went to venues for facilities upgrades and disabled access, but the lion's share went to festivals. And I would have expected to see a bit more long-term investment in kind of our touring infrastructure, like our small to medium venues in this round. So, you know, there's some plus sides here, but there's also some negatives as well.
Is it sustainable going forward as well? Like, is there a fear that, you know, our promoters are going to end up relying on these grants and they won't be able to survive without them?
I think the festivals are increasingly reliant on these national grants. I think we have to remember as well that local and state governments also do a lot of heavy lifting when it comes to live music. I know I've just been doing some research in Wollongong recently, and I know the city council there is doing a lot of great work. And the New South Wales government have really turned a corner and are investing quite heavily in live music as well. So we have to remember that there are two other levels of government below these national funding opportunities. But yeah, there is a worry here that our festival sector is becoming increasingly unsustainable and is becoming more and more reliant on these funding opportunities from the federal government.
We've got a lot of messages coming through. People who are excited for the weekend, maybe going to Meredith. Lots of the Triple J audience keen for that. Members of our team as well. We've got someone on the text line now, though, who says big festivals are so expensive and have such a huge variety of artists, most of which I'm never that interested in. Mini festivals are where it's at. One Night Stand and Hyperfest have been the best shows I've been to in years. We need more like that. Okay, well, that's good to hear. People liking One Night Stand, but also this idea of more smaller curated festivals, Sam. It's been kicking around for a while that that could be the future as opposed to the mega festivals.
Yeah, I think boutique festivals are certainly a market that is quite viable. We're seeing more and more of those smaller camping festivals that are not as reliant on major headliners. But conversely, we're also seeing major festivals pivot to one single massive headliner to kind of carry the bill. You're seeing that with Laneway, with Charlie XCX last year, and Chapel Roan this year coming up. Also Good Things Festival that's on this weekend. Tool is a massive get for that festival to kind of carry the broader lineup. So I think we're moving away from the multi-genre, you know, kind of multi-style festival that we know from the past, like our Big Day Outs and A Splendor in the Grasses, because the way we listen to music has fundamentally changed through streaming and Spotify. We're getting pushed towards, you know, a certain group of artists or, you know, a few different styles and genres, which means that those kind of massive multi-genre festivals are no longer viable.
Yeah, tastes are changing, habits are changing as well. We might unpack a little bit of that on the shake-up tomorrow, actually, and talk about some of those changes that we've seen in recent years. This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Dr. Sam Whiting from RMIT about the live music industry in Australia and festivals specifically, a lot of them being cancelled in recent months and years. It's just something we expect now. We've got people on the text line who are really calling for their favourite festivals to be brought back. Someone says bring back Unify. Sam, we heard before about the idea of a ticket levy. What is that exactly? Because they've introduced this in the UK. Can you explain how it works?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. So essentially it's in the UK, it's a £1, so $2 levy on any ticket for an event that's 55,000 capacity or more. So we're talking our major arena tours, you know, your Taylor Swift's, but also major music festivals. And that money would be redirected to small to medium venues and some of those other festivals as well, maybe those more boutique festivals, as a way of kind of keeping the grassroots alive. And I think it's been really successful in the UK. I think it's a great initiative that we should look to adopting here. We've got a few obstacles to that. I think in the UK, one thing that really helped push it along was the threat of legislation. The government said to the industry, if you don't do this, we will. So that the industry got their act together and they came up with this voluntary levy. But that also took a lot of consensus across the sector. You know, you had multiple promoters, you know, major promoters like Live Nation getting together with smaller indies, and coming up with a model through which to redistribute this funding. They actually had to set up a whole brand new charity called Live Trust to administer that funding and redistribute it accordingly. So I'd like to see the sector in Australia move towards that model, but it will take a lot of work and a lot of consensus to get a voluntary ticket levy up.
I mean, Sam, you're speaking to so many people in the industry and obviously you research this stuff every day. How are you feeling about the future? Because we have been hearing for so many years about how it's not looking good and festivals could be dead and that's it. And not great news for music lovers who really want to think that there are still a lot of good times to be had. How do you feel about where things are headed?
I've just spent 3 months in the UK and Europe researching all the different ways that those markets are dealing with these problems. And I am actually optimistic, but it's going to take some structural change. Looking at festivals, like we've been talking about, I think ticket levies are a great start. I think the sector really needs to be thinking about that. And if the sector doesn't move towards it, the government should be looking to legislate. I think also at the grassroots end of the spectrum, new venue models, perhaps not-for-profit venue models, or other ways of securing venues long term. So one of the main problems is many venues don't own the buildings that they're operating out of, and there's some really great community initiatives in the UK where passionate music lovers are pooling their funding to actually buy the buildings that venues are operating out of and giving them long term leases. So there are lots of great initiatives abroad that we can look to, but it does require a bit of a structural rethink of the way that we fund music. And also it might take a bit of moving away from this reliance on alcohol in particular as the main revenue stream for financing the production of live music.
Yeah, especially if people are drinking less and habits there are changing as well. It does sound like what you're saying, Sam, is we need to be, of course, providing support and short-term fixes are helpful, but we also need to be thinking of some of those structural changes as well and how we can shift things to make sure that there is viability in the decades ahead. Look, thanks so much for having a chat with us, Dr. Sam Whiting from RMIT. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to switch focus now and we're going to talk about your social media algorithms.
Hack!
Do you remember the last time that you had fun on the internet?
The internet just feels like a really strange place right now.
I hate the TikTok algorithm.
Instagram's algorithm is so messed up.
It's just like not good vibes here.
I hate the algorithm now. You like one freaking video and then it's like, here you go.
On Triple J.
Yeah, if you had the choice to quit your algorithm, would you do it? Opt out of the noise, the distraction, reclaim control of your feed. Is it even possible? How would it work? Could it change society? Big claims, but maybe someone who thinks that all could happen is Chanel Contos. You probably know Chanel's name because we've spoken with her quite a few times over the past few years. In 2021, a simple Instagram poll that she put up asking students about their experiences of sexual assault ended up catapulting her onto the national stage. Soon she was leading a push for consent education in schools. She was changing the conversation around consent in this country, meeting with political leaders, prime ministers. She's been recognised here and overseas for her activism and social change. And now she's got a new priority. Chanel wants to fix our feeds. She's with us to explain. Chanel Contos from Teachers Consent, welcome to Hack. Firstly, why do you think we should be able to turn our algorithms off?
I think there's a lot of reasons to argue for algorithms being turned off. There's a lot of conversation at the moment about social media bans. I think this would be another policy that could provide a softer landing to social media for young people. We're really concerned about the radicalization of young men online. However, there's a lot of reasons that someone might want to turn their algorithm off. For example, there's a lot of disordered eating content, self-harm content, and other harmful content that can come across our screens. And then also, again, this is all just about choice. So you might just want an algorithm-free weekend. And that means that with a setting change, you can have that.
So ideally, yeah, what would it look like? Would it mean that you would just be getting the posts, the stories from the people you do follow?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like taking it back to Instagram in 2010 for the OGs who were on it then. It's chronological order of people you follow. And it would also be a reemergence of hashtags because that is how you would find new content that you actively want to see. We are coming from the assumption that most people who receive misogynistic content on their phones do not actively seek it out and it's propagated to them. And that's been backed up by research and experiments that have been done by Dublin University where they created fake dummy accounts and just simply said, I'm a boy or a man. And all of these accounts received extreme misogynistic content within 23 minutes of sign up. So the fact that that's being sent to them, I think, is testament to the fact that we can flip the switch on this and take control back over what we see.
When we talk about algorithms, though, what does that mean? Because people hear the word a lot, but they might not understand what it is and why it's in place and why these social media platforms have the algorithms. Are you able to give a bit of an explanation?
Algorithms are essentially a set of rules and instructions that social media companies put in place. And based on those rules and instructions, the algorithm informs the feed, so decides what content to give out to you. And currently the way social media companies are run is they're profit-driven first and foremost, which means they're essentially trying to galvanize our attention as much as they possibly can by invoking emotions such as anger or outrage, or also desire and insecurity and massive ones. They know that we're going to stay on their platforms for longer because we're going to have that like reaction to the post or that dopamine from it or like whatever it is. Therefore, they're going to increase their profits. And then algorithms take in data from the general demographic that you're within. So they might say, you know, you are a middle-aged woman living in a metropolitan city. They'll vibe you out based on that. And then they'll also take really specific data from you. How often do you watch to the end of a video? Oh, every time there's a tiny cat on your screen, you watch to the end. How quickly do you scroll off a video? Oh, as soon as someone's talking about politics, you don't care and you move on. Or like, do you save videos? Do you send them to your friends? Do you like them? All those, that information is collected as well. And if you turn off your algorithm, that personalized information wouldn't be able to be collected. I think the thing about this is also, if you like your algorithm and if you like getting hyper-targeted ads because, you know, it's handy because it tells you exactly, you know, what Christmas presents to buy for that person you've been looking for, you can just keep it on.
Because there would be people listening now who are thinking, well, I really like my algorithm and maybe it's helped me find a community that I wouldn't have found before. I see a lot of content that I don't have to seek out, but I'm really happy to receive. You're saying it's not a forced algorithm turn off. You could decide.
No, a teacher's consent. We're all about choice. And this policy is first and foremost about informed and affirmative consent. That's why we're actually asking for an opt-in to the algorithm. So the default when you download a social media app is that the algorithm is not on and then you have to choose to enter it, which is affirmative consent. And then turning it on and off at will can be done whenever you want. We are not trying to take anything away from Australians. We're not trying to tell Australians that their feeds are bad or that they should change anything. We are simply saying we should have this option so individual people can choose how they use social media. Because currently, if you're someone who thinks, like, my algorithm doesn't serve me, your options are to, like, then be socially isolated from a platform that can bring a lot of good and connection or continue to see this content. And that's something we kept hearing from a lot of boys as well, that they kind of knew that this thing was wrong and they had, like, wanted to get out of it. This messaging about women being property and this messaging that promotes, like, a lot of anger towards women and like entitlement around their sexual gratification or all those things. But then again, in a moment of insecurity, you can slip so easily back into that if it's constantly being pushed onto your screen. And then we hear a lot as well. A lot of my friends have actually said it to me that they get a lot of content around dating that really doesn't serve them and doesn't like affiliate with their beliefs, because it's very much basically saying like it's a whole like trad wife thing and like how to be demure and how to be a high value woman so a high value man will want you, and you know that that's not what you think. So again, if you're just like, I don't want to go down that, that's fine. And also, like, I personally love my TikTok algorithm. I would totally keep my TikTok algorithm on. Instagram algorithm, totally sick of it.
Okay, so it depends. This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese speaking with Chanel Contos from Teachers Consent. They've launched a campaign to fix our feeds, give Australians the option of turning off their social media algorithms. Lot of feedback on this one. Someone says, 100%, I want to reset my algorithm. Happy with my news feed, but video feed in filter bubble loop now. Someone else says, this sounds brilliant. Dump the algorithm. Zach says, it sounds like a lot of good reasons to ban minors from social media, to be honest. And another person says, I 100% fully agree with being able to turn off the algorithm. One of the main reasons I stopped using Instagram was because they basically forced posts on me that I didn't want to see. Websites like Tumblr and Discord let you see the people you follow. I want choice, not for it to be forced on me. It's really interesting, Chanel. The other question people might have is this even possible? Like, turning off algorithms, can platforms do that? Because there would be some listening now probably thinking that is social media. If you get rid of the algorithms, the whole thing might just collapse.
It's totally possible, but the only people who can make it possible is the government. We do need the government to step in. I think big tech companies really benefit from the fact that we think they're so hard to regulate. But with good collective action and a willing government, we have the Online Safety Act up for review next year. And this is a completely possible policy. And it's also a very similar one has been done in the EU.
Okay, so people are already having these decisions in front of them in parts of the world. They're already...
It's very new, so we haven't been able to evaluate it yet, but yeah.
Okay. What is the content that you're most worried about, Chanel, in terms of young people and what they're coming across?
We are hearing from teachers, from parents and from young people themselves that there has been a very sudden a notable rise in misogynistic attitudes, misogynistic language and behaviours in classrooms, at the home and in friendship groups. And a lot of people like really don't know what to do about it and they're really jarred by it. I mean, we've all heard about Andrew Tate at this point. We are really worried about these misogynistic attitudes being so normalised and being brought into the mainstream. They've obviously always existed, but they've existed on fringe culture. And there is a correlation between believing these misogynistic attitudes and being someone who endorses or is likely to perpetrate violence against women. What we're seeing in teenage boys is a rise in perpetration of sexual violence. And unfortunately, for the first time ever, teenage boys have overtaken adult males as the most likely perpetrator of child sexual abuse.
I heard you say that this week, and that just astounded me.
Yeah. I mean, it talks to two things, because we've had a decline in adult perpetrated child sexual abuse, which is an amazing thing, but it also shows a rising rate of perpetration of teenage boys. So that's on teenage girls, and it's most specifically current or former partners or someone known to the victim. So we're not entirely sure why that is, but this was a very significant and world-leading study that came out of Australia. It's called the Australian Child Maltreatment Study, if you want to look into it more.
Has there been much support for what you're putting forward?
Yeah, big time. And we've also, I'm speaking now about 30 hours after we initially launched, and we've got over 2,000 signatures already on our open letter. So please do go and sign that if you're listening to this and thinking this is something I would want. But yeah, we've gotten cross-party support. We've had, I think, pretty much all the independents have now signed on to the letter. We have former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull signed on to the letter. And Julia Gillard very kindly posted on LinkedIn and Instagram.
I mean, the letter's addressed to the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese. Are you hopeful that you might be able to have a chat with him or talk to him about this, convince him of the merits of something like this?
Yeah, I'm definitely hopeful around that. I mean, it's really early days. We would love to hear from the government whenever they're ready. I do think that Australia is in a position where they're ready and committed to be world leading in online safety, as we are just seeing that as a new and a rising problem.
There are a lot of people, obviously, who support the government's moves for this social media ban, which is due to come into effect next week. And obviously there'd be a lot of people who'd support this campaign to clean up their feeds and make sure we give people control over their social media. There would also be those, though, who say that this is overreach, that we shouldn't be interfering. What would you say to those people?
I would say to those people that you don't have to use this feature. Again, we're all about choice. We don't want to take anything away from anyone. If you like your feeds the way they are, that's amazing. But what I really like about this policy that we're proposing is that if you're someone who wants to use it, or someone who you want to ask someone else to use it, so again, parents to their kids, or from having conversations over the last few days, I think we talk about young people a lot, but I'm sure there's a lot of listeners now that are really worried about the content that their parents are watching. Mm. And they maybe don't have the same critical thinking skills or media literacy skills that we have in terms of online content, because for them it was kind of like, if a piece of information was printed in the paper, it was truth.
Such a good point. Like, there would definitely be nobody who's listening now who hasn't had a situation with a parent or a grandparent and had to explain, oh, that's not real, or absolutely, yeah.
Super prone to misinformation and disinformation. So yeah, it's something that you could just flick off your parents' phones or your grandparents' phones and try de-radicalise wherever they're going.
De-radicalise parents. There's a lot of people who are pretty keen on that idea. Chanel, can I ask you about the social media ban that is going to come into effect next week? Like, what are your thoughts on that? As someone who has been in the education space and who has really been driving consent education in this country, how do you feel about what is going to be implemented?
I have a nuanced view on this, but at the end of the day, sitting here as the CEO of a violence prevention organisation, I support the social media delay. I would much prefer that tech companies regulated themselves and that we didn't have to do this. I would much prefer, you know, adequate regulation for young people. I think it's a really good first step. I think that this proposal for algorithm regulation in terms of opt-in and turn-off is a very, very, very good second step, because that would provide a softer landing for teens when they do enter social media. And I think we do need to look at the like bigger picture thinking about it, because obviously there's always going to be a ways to get around age restrictions, and young people on the internet have been doing that as long as the internet has existed. I don't even know where the internet's going to go in the next few years. I think that's also something I really want to highlight about this policy. This might be something that you don't want now, but you might really want it in 3 years, because everything's changed so fast. And like, we probably can't even comprehend what social media is going to look like if it keeps advancing the way it does and it keeps, you know, intentionally being addictive.
Janelle Contos from Teachers Consent, thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you. Triple J has been such an important part of this journey, constantly reporting on it and championing the youth-led movement, so we appreciate it.
Hack on Triple J.
Yeah, and if you do want to know more about Chanel's campaign, you can head to the Teachers Consent website, teachersconsent.com. You can see the open letter to the Prime Minister. You can sign it as well if you want to. And our whole chat with Chanel is up on Hack's podcast right now, our long listen of the week. We get into other stuff in the extended version. Talk about what Chanel's been up to over the past couple of years overseas. She's been studying at Oxford. Very, very, very busy person. So go check it out there. A lot of messages coming through. Someone says, I miss my feeds without algorithms. I used to actually see my friends' posts and not just be advertised at and rage baited. And someone else says, I completely avoid algorithm-based social media these days. You know, I just stick to Discord or Mastodon that are based on channels or social circles that I choose. That is all for Hack for now.